now Sean Duke is here. He's assistant editor, deputy editor, co-editor, or something editor of Science Bin. What are you?
I'm co-editor.
Yes. Co-editor, yeah, yeah. Right.
Very democratic.
Okay, so you're not deputy and you're not assistant. You are actually as equal as the other
as
editor.
As equal as the other one, yeah.
Who's the other editor?
The other guy is called Tom Kennedy.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, okay.
Right. No, hey, Tom. Now, John Joke is here from Science Spin, and he's going to talk about mysterious places.
Yes, I thought this might be fun to look at some mysterious places and to see what science actually tells us about these places. The ones I thought I might talk about, there's one in Peru called the Nazca Lines, we'll get on to that. The Bermuda Triangle, a lot of us would have heard of it. Easter Island and the famous statues that they discovered there when they came across it in the 1800s. And I thought we might just briefly mention Newgrange as well. So these are places that we really don't know an awful lot about them, but science is trying to figure out what's going on.
Okay, well, so the Bermuda Triangle, what were they saying? Planes disappeared or something like that?
Okay, the Bermuda Triangle, yeah. Just to tell people where it is exactly, it is a triangle, and if you drew a straight line from Miami out to Bermuda and then down to Puerto Rico, that area there, so it's off the coast of Florida, if you like, and south of Florida. So this area really, I suppose, the folklore that built up around it started, I suppose, really in just after World War II was finished in 1945. There was a famous Flight 19. Now, what Flight 19, you might have heard of it. What it was a group of five planes, and there were military planes, US military planes, and they went off on a training mission out of Fort Lauderdale in Florida. And the instructor was a very experienced guy. He was training the other four, and he got disorientated, it seems, for some unknown reason, and he kept on making turns, and he didn't know where land was exactly, and he kept on turning out to sea thinking that he was going back towards Florida, got completely disorientated, and eventually radio contact was lost. He didn't know where he was by the end of it. They ditched into the sea somewhere, obviously, because they completely disappeared off the face of the earth. So Flight 19 became a big story,
and never been found.
No, and they showed up in the 1977 film Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where, you know, there's all these theories that maybe they were abducted by aliens and all these crazy notions. But having said that, there were lots of other incidents as well. If we go through a few of them, there was another plane. I've written a few of them down. There was another plane that actually disappeared also off the coast. It was in 1948. It was a little bit later. It was a Douglas aircraft. It just disappeared on a flight from San Juan to Puerto Rico, which is down in that area again, and all 33 people were lost, and again, they don't know what happened. Another case in 1963, where there was a ship called the Marine Sulphur Queen. It was carrying sulphur, which of course is a commodity, and it disappeared also, and they're not sure what happened. So there's two schools of thought here, obviously. There's one school of thought where scientists have looked at it and they said, well, actually, in actual fact, you know, this is a very busy shipping lane. If you look, there's an awful lot of traffic going between the United States and these various islands back and forth. So like any place where there's a lot of traffic, you're going to have more accidents. Then there's another school of thought which says, hang on a second, you know, there seems to be something strange going on here because all of these things disappear without trace. I mean, how can you explain that? So some of the theories, I mean, they range from, you know, the bizarre kind of alien abduction theories. This always seems to come up when we can't explain something, that, you know, that maybe the Flight 19 people were somehow abducted by aliens. And of course this came up in the Close Encounters film, where they found them on the spaceship. The other ideas might be a rogue wave. Now these rogue waves, a lot of people wouldn't know that very, very strong waves occasionally for unknown reason will just appear in the middle of the ocean, and they will sink a ship. Now that wouldn't of course explain the aircraft, yeah. So I don't know about that. Now another thing, of course, down there, it's tropical, so you're going to get every year around September we hear of hurricanes hitting the coast of Florida or South Carolina, North Carolina, so it's a tropical place and there could be hurricanes. But again, you know, say Flight 19 and the other one I mentioned, the Douglas aircraft with the 32 people, that happened in December. Now December is not hurricane season, so that couldn't explain that. So what's next? Well, in the Flight 19 case, the compass seemed to be not working, or this was one of the theories to explain why this very experienced pilot suddenly got lost and making these turns and turns and turns, didn't know where he was. So is there some kind of magnetic anomaly in the Earth there? You know, because the Earth has a magnetic field that'll knock out the compasses. That's just a theory. And of course, then you get into the very strange things like, you know, maybe it's something to do with aliens or leftover technology from Atlantis, which is this submerged city of mythological fame. So that's really it, and that's where it stands.
Anything recent?
No, not so much recent. No. There hasn't been anything recent. Like, a lot of these stories date back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So, you know, that's
right.
Where you want to, in terms of people just disappearing off the face of the earth, you have to go that far back.
All right. So, the Bermuda Triangle.
That's
anywhere
the
else?
Triangle, yeah. Well, this place in Peru, I thought, again, it's a very interesting one to my mind anyway. It's located, this feature, with southern Nazca Desert in southern Peru. So, that's south of Lima Desert. So, and there's almost no wind up there. So these features, which are essentially lines, very distinct, very clear, straight lines and different lines, which depict things like monkeys, butterflies, spiders, all kinds of things, which are only, they're very large, first of all. Some of them are up to 660 feet across, so they're massive things. And the very interesting thing about them, they were created, just to say, it's mainly red pebbles that are on the surface of this desert, and they scratched into the surface to remove the pebbles, and then there's white ground underneath. Now, so that's what the feature is. But lo and behold, in the 1930s, the first time ever when people actually travelled across the Nazca Desert by air, they looked down and said, my God, what's that? They could see these spiders, these butterflies, etc. And they're only visible from the air. So the question is, why would these people bother to create these features that are only visible from the air? So again, we're into the realm of... you know, there's a guy actually who made a fortune out of a book which is called The Chariots of the Gods. His name is Eric von Daniken. I think he's Dutch. And his theory is that they're runways for aliens.
And he made a lot of money.
Yeah. But again, you know, why did they do it? Because if you were on the ground, you would not be able to see it. So they're actually amazing. If anybody wants to look at the pictures online, they can have a look at Nazca, the Nazca lines, they're called in Peru. So that's a bit of a mystery. And I should say also, there's one fascinating one which actually looks like a human figure, which is carved into the desert surface, and looks like a human figure waving back up into the air. So people can look at that and judge for themselves. Of course, Mr. von Daniken says that's kind of, you know, the Nazca people saying hello to the aliens, come on in.
The aliens, yeah, okay.
So the Bermuda Triangle. Another one I think is fascinating is Easter Island. Now, Easter Island is famous for these huge statues, and it's the most remote inhabited island in the world. It's a territory of Chile, but it's actually 3,500 kilometres from the coast of Chile, way out into the Pacific Ocean. It's in the middle of nowhere. So the reason it's called Easter Island is that in 1722, this Dutchman arrived on Easter Sunday, and he just called it Easter Island. When he arrived there, he found these monumental, huge stone statues, which were faces of people. And of course, these were enormous. Some of them were up to 80 tons. There was even one that wasn't carved yet out of this volcanic crater where they carved them, literally out of the volcano. 82 tons. One was 200 tons. And they were moved somehow from this volcano and placed in different locations around this small island, they're all along the coastline and facing in. And they had slightly different faces. And some of them had what looked like some kind of ceremonial headdress. So this was absolutely mysterious. There were about 1,200 people living on the island. And many people thought it was absolutely impossible. How could these people that were relatively, I suppose, backward, for lack of a better word, how could they have carved these out of the mountain, transported them, and put them in place on these very high plateaus near the coastline? How could they have managed to achieve that? And even if they managed to achieve it, why would they bother achieving it? Well, it again, a mystery. But one clue, I suppose, that scientists that really started to look at this recently to try and solve this, all the trees on the island are used up, right? So there's hardly a tree on the island. So they think that what they must have done is they must have used the wood as a rolling mechanism to put these giant stones after they carved them in, you know, in situ and took them out of the quarry. Then they moved them using this rolling mechanism. But again, why would they do it? You know, what on earth did it mean? The theory, and it's still a theory, is that the statues, because the oral history, there's only a few people that would survive, and the oral history, because there's no written history that survives, is that maybe these are the faces of former leaders of the local chieftains, if you like. And every time they died, they created a huge statue, and the statue looked inward and kind of benevolently looked down on the people and tried to protect them. But they're not sure. And again, very interesting that these people actually, there's certain hieroglyphs, like ancient Egypt, we've heard of hieroglyphs, which is a language, it's symbols and shapes and different things. And they managed to break the code of the Egyptian hieroglyphs, and they know what they mean now through the famous Rosetta Stone, which was like a little code that was on a stone that they found. Now, these hieroglyphs in Easter Island, which is very unusual for these people in the Pacific Ocean, because nobody else at the time that these were created, which is about 1,000 years ago, nobody else had a written language. So these 1,200 people were somehow unique, but they haven't cracked the code of the hieroglyphs. So they don't know. If they manage to crack the code of the hieroglyphs, they might find the secret of Easter Island hidden in there. They haven't done it yet.
Right. That's fascinating. Why there in the
why
middle
there,
of
exactly.
Nowhere?
And, if, you know, they can tell that they're genetically they're Polynesian, so that would mean, you know, people like, say, the Pacific Islanders that you might see playing for the All Blacks rugby team. You know, they're kind of
right.
Those
they
kind of
Hawaiian as well. They're Polynesian.
Yeah, all over the South Pacific, they'd be all Polynesian people. But these guys were somehow unique. And they were the only ones that carved these monumental statues. They were out in the middle of nowhere on their own. They had a written language, hieroglyphs. None of their cousins had it. And so it's a scientists love these kind of things. It's a bit of a mystery.
But I hate the fact that I can't get an answer.
Yeah.
Stephen was in contact to say the Bermuda Triangle Flight 19, didn't the rescue plane that they sent out to search for them also disappear?
Yeah, as far as I know, that's right. Yeah, also disappeared. So, I mean, that's even more of a mystery, you know, because, yeah, what's going on? Absolutely. Now, it should be said that it seems the compass wasn't working because they were in radio contact, you know, and he was saying that the compass doesn't seem to be working. I think I'm off the Keys of Florida. They have a transcript of the conversation, and then he's getting more and more confused, you know. So, but also added to that, the weather wasn't great. So maybe, you know, the rescue plane went out and it was extremely bad weather and that plane got lost, you know. Yeah. And you are back in 1945, so, you know, the technology wasn't as sophisticated as today.
Right. Do you want to mention Newgrange?
Yeah, I was going to mention Newgrange because I thought, look, we do have a mysterious site, if you like, here in Ireland, so why not mention our own one? Now, we should be quite proud, you know, all these things that are going on in Ireland today, but we do have an ancient civilization, if you like, because Newgrange, which is a very sophisticated monument, was built 500 years before the pyramids and 1,000 years before Stonehenge, which, of course, the British are always going on about. So it's a very ancient monument. They're not exactly sure, despite all the studies since the 1950s really looking at it, what exactly it's all about. Now, the original idea was that it was a tomb. You know, that it was like these cairns, they're called cairns, which are littered all over the Irish countryside up on the top of mountains where they bury chieftains or important people. But actually, they only found two skeletons in there when they opened it in 1950 something. Professor Kelly opened it. So if there was only two people and it was there for thousands of years, it doesn't seem to be a tomb. So then they thought, right, what is it? So they looked a little bit closer at it and they found this famous, what's called a roof box. It's a little box which is over the entrance, and as most of us would know, the light shines through this roof box only once a year, which is on the winter solstice, which is the 21st of December, which is the shortest day of the year, and the light goes down and shines for 17 minutes down this long passageway and hits this central area. Now, fascinatingly, it shines down these days 4 minutes, exactly 4 minutes after sunrise, right? But this was built 5,000 years ago. So if you backtrack do your calculations to where the Earth was in relation to the Sun 5,000 years ago, it would have shone down at precisely sunrise. So they think, the thinking now today is that rather than it being a tomb, it was like a huge astronomical calendar. So when this happened, when the light shone down, these were agricultural people because they were farming all around the Boyne, which is a very, which is a, still today is a very rich agricultural area, that when this happened, this told them that the year is turning. That's the shortest day of the year. Thank God for that. The days are going to get longer now, and we're going to move into spring, and we can do various things with our animals and our crops, and we can plan, etc. Another mystery there is these spirals. I mean, the spirals have become famous in Ireland. That they're, you know, they became embedded into the Celtic culture, and these which you see on jewellery and everything like that. But what are they all about? We're not really sure. I talked to a professor in UCD recently who actually thinks that they were created by people who were in some kind of religious trance, and maybe they were taking some kind of drug. You know, that they were in this trance. Other people think it might be actually just a map of the area, that it's a map of the Boyne. Other people that it might represent the cycle of life and death, but, you know, essentially they haven't a clue really what they're all about. But certainly the main thing, I suppose, is that they're heading towards the idea that this was the centre of it was like a cathedral for these people in the megalithic times 5,000 years ago, where they would go and they would worship maybe the sun and the stars. That was their religion at the time, but not, definitely not a tomb. You know, it wasn't just simply a tomb. And there are other places in Ireland where they have these alignments, as they're called, the roof box thing, like Nowth and Dowth, which are satellite tombs, which are just around Newgrange. They have them as well, not as sophisticated. And there's another one in Loch Crewe, which I think it's County Kilkenny. So certainly that was a thing that the people did in these days. Yeah, it's fascinating. And it's still, by the way, the amount of stone that was used to build it, 200,000 tons of stone, which is quite an amazing amount. Again, how did they transport that? Another thing which is interesting, if you go and visit Newgrange, is that it's bone dry inside, that they actually had this overlaying way of building. They're quite sophisticated builders. They obviously knew an awful lot about astronomy, and they were agricultural. So they were right up there. Wow.